taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Birdland Today, your daily dose of Orioles talk.
Hey guys, welcome to Birdland Today. Now, did you notice that timestamp when you hit play? This isn't a 10-minute episode. This is a hour and 15-minute episode. Why? Because I've got something special to share with you. This past weekend, I was on the Bat Flips and Maple Dips podcast. It is a Toronto Blue Jays podcast. And they did a little, you know, let's talk about our opponents. Let's talk about the AL East teams. And I was on there to talk about the Orioles. They said, hey, come on for 20, 30 minutes. And we want to learn about the Orioles. And I went an hour and 14 minutes. And it was a great conversation. So I wanted to share it with all of you guys here. Because it's finally here. Tomorrow is opening day. I feel like I've been counting down to it forever. But 3 o'clock tomorrow, your Baltimore Orioles face the Toronto Blue Jays, which is hopefully the start of an amazing year here in Birdland. So I want to get this out. I want to share this with you. So that's all we're going to do for today is take a look at this. Let's talk about the Orioles with some guys from up north. You can go ahead and hit them up. They're not on Twitter or anything, so I don't know how you can find them. I know they're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all that, but it's Bat Flips and Maple Dips. So check that out right now. And don't forget, tomorrow after the show, we're going to do the post-game show where we're going to talk about that first game with the Orioles. Hopefully, we're going to be celebrating. Hopefully, we're going to be talking about some long balls. Hopefully, we're going to be talking about an Orioles victory to start the season. So join me over at youtube.com/birdlandsports for that, or on Facebook, Twitter, all everywhere you can find me. And make sure you head on over to Birdland Today and sign up for the newsletter, because that'll send you all those links that you need as well. And I'm really great articles in today's newsletter. So make sure you check that out, and let's pass it on now to Bat Flips and Maple Dips.
Justin, it's almost time for the season to start, and what better way to kick it off than to have a guest on the show? We haven't done this in a very long time.
Yeah, with very ourselves talk.
Yeah, I'm tired of hearing the sound of my own voice. I'm tired of hearing your voice, frankly.
Yeah, that's
right. I'm just kidding. But I'm excited to do this. It's been a long time since we did this, and I can't think of like a better way to kick off the season with our season preview, but also having on another podcaster from a rival team. So, Justin, I want to introduce you to our first guest of the 2025 season. Section 336 is Josh Soroka. So, Josh, thanks for being on the show. Super, super happy to have you here. Tell us about the show, man. We found this when we were looking for a good Orioles podcast, and I want to hear all about it. So tell me about Section 336.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for having me. I hate when the Orioles start the season on the road, but the best part about starting in Toronto means we don't have to have that rain day. So to play four straight games to start the season is going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
So, all right, so Section 336, I always forget. We're 13 or 14 years out. I believe we started covering the Orioles in 2012. So I don't know how that math works out as far as what season.
Long time regardless. Yeah.
But it started out as my background's audio engineering. So I would help other podcasts with the tech issues of their shows and getting launched. And baseball is all about family. For my family, the Orioles are just bred into my family. It's what we bleed. It's what we talk about all the time. It's really the only thing I ever talk about with my dad and brother is sports. Sure, we get into some other stuff, but it's all starts and ends around sports and a lot of the Orioles. So we started it back then with me and my brother and brother-in-law getting together and just having fun and talking about the Orioles. We wanted our podcast, the whole goal of it would be just friends catching up at a bar, watching the ball game. And that's what we did. And really, the reason we're still doing it this many years isn't because of the Orioles. It's because it's that time where we as brothers get to catch up and we get to talk and we happen to record it for other people. So because of that, we let our show, we go off topic a lot because we share about Little League with our kids or our softball games that we're playing or whatever's going on in our lives because it's a relationship. And I think that helps the listeners also feel like they are part of our family as well. The name Section 336, it came because we have season tickets in Section 336. We both live out of state now, but we still have tickets in Section 336. And we just kind of use the tickets as much as we can and go up there to sit in Section 336. It is the upper deck seats directly behind home plate. And I will put those seats up against any seats. Sure, you can get the nice close seats and be close to the action, but that's got its downsides on the launch angle of the ball and seeing what's going on. From those upper deck seats right behind home plate, we're in row 3 in that upper deck. You can love see that. Those everything are the best that's seats. Going on that ball field. Love
yeah,
it.
Those are the best spot to be. Yeah.
So that's kind of where we started and where we're going.
Very cool, man. That's awesome. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm an umpire as well for minor league ball where I live. And yeah, the view behind the plate, but the view from behind and a little bit up is like unbeaten at a ball game. So
yeah, it's fun being close, but if you really want to see everything, you got to be a little higher.
Totally. Yeah. No, you nailed that one. No, that's pretty cool. And, I mean, having the season tickets and still living out of state, that's dedication to the game.
Well, you know, all through my childhood, we were on a wait list to get these season tickets.
Oh, yeah.
Because Camden Yards back in the 90s was sold out all of the time. So when we finally got access to them, they're never being let go. They're ours.
Totally. Yeah. You pass those down in your will? Is that how that works there?
Well, they are in our father's name currently, and okay. I'm told that they are, that there's stuff in the will to handle them.
Nice. So, yeah, okay. I know those people who do that. Like where I live in Western Canada, we have a Canadian Football League team, and people will leave their season tickets like to their next of kin when they die. It's pretty wild. Yeah.
You know the only city outside of Canada to win the Canadian Football League.
Baltimore. Yeah.
It's Baltimore. I enjoyed those Stallion years. When we didn't have a football team or didn't have an NFL team.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
you guys
a cool connection too. Yeah.
What was it, 95 you guys got the Ravens?
Yes, something like 96, that? Something like that, 95, 96. But before then, I mean, and that's when I'm in high school. And so before that, when I was really getting into sports, I was raised to hate the Redskins. The Washington NFL team because they were keeping us from getting the NFL team back in Baltimore.
Right.
And I just heard so many stories of the Colts leaving when I was a baby when we got the CFL team, it was embraced in Baltimore. People loved it. Mm-hmm. The tickets, the stadium was full and we enjoyed that football. And eventually we got a team, but I think it was, we needed the CFL team to prove that, hey, Baltimore can support this team. Get an NFL team over here.
Yeah.
And the Ravens have been pretty successful, so.
The Ravens have been very successful.
Yeah.
3 Super Bowls since then.
That's great. Awesome.
I thought it was only 2.
Is it 2? Am I wrong? Let me see.
Well, because Flacco. No, well, there's the Flacco one. And then
you're right, 2.
The worst starting quarterback in the history of Super Bowl winning teams, Trent Dilfer.
You're right. It's Dilfer and then Flacco. I don't know why I said 3. There's 2.
Wishful thinking.
Maybe.
You know what though? We'll see. Okay, so shout out to the Baltimore Ravens though. I'm a big fan of Lamar. He's great.
It's really hard not to be a fan of Lamar.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I see it. But I mean, back to the Orioles. So we're big on history around these parts. So what I really wanted to chat you up about was just kind of hit you up about the Orioles. You talk about how it's a big part of your family.
Yes.
How far back does that go for you? Like, I mean, does your dad, how long has your dad been a fan of the Orioles?
Yeah, my dad was it was really started by his dad, that they really bonded over the Orioles, and his dad and the Orioles were an important part of their relationship, so it passed on through that. I never really knew his my grandfather. He passed away when I was a baby. But that love of the game that he taught my dad is then what my dad taught my brother and I. So it did pass down, and it is part of our family. I have three daughters. Two of them have names related to the Orioles.
Oh, wow.
I have one named Brooke after Brooks Robinson.
Yeah.
Her name is Brooke Robin. And my youngest is named Camden after, of course, Camden Yards.
Wow. That is for real. Well, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, I know. That's amazing. But I can kind of see the timeline working out quite well, because obviously the Orioles were probably at their peak as far as like being heads and shoulders above everybody else, would have been like the late 60s, early 70s, around the time of...
Yeah, the Orioles won their last World Series in 1983. I was three years old, so I have no memory of it.
Yeah, so they actually, around the time, you know, I guess what we would call the heyday of like your dad would have been like them winning the pennant in like 66, 69, 70, 71.
Perfect. And perfect childhood, and that's where you fall in love with the Orioles. And that's where, right now, when the Orioles are doing well, I am so jealous of all the little kids that are growing up to become Oriole fans right now. I had a little bit of that where I fell in love with the Orioles in 1988, 1989. I think most people fall in love with baseball around that 8-year-old, 9-year-old time frame.
Yep.
And for me, that led to the 88 season where the Orioles were horrible and started the season losing 21 straight games. To this miracle year in 89, though, where it felt like everything was working out for us. And we had these young kids. It reminds me so much of this year's Orioles, where it was these young kids that the sky's the limit. They're going out there. They're playing unexpected. Now, that season ended with game 162, where we had to beat the Blue Jays in order to get into the playoffs. And outside of the Sky Dome, our starting pitcher, Pete Harnish, stepped on a nail, so then he could not start that game, man. And we had to go to another pitcher, and we ended up losing that game. But that was the season that I remember so many details of, being a 9-year-old boy falling in love with this game.
That would be like the origin story of a villain story, you would think. Like just having the starting pitcher who is going to give you the shot to get into the playoffs.
I tell people all the time, it should have set me up to be like, this is what it's like to be an Orioles fan. You feel like you can get close, but then you're never there and you're always disappointed.
Don't worry. We've been feeling the exact same thing with our Blue Jays the last 20 some years. Like I was like, you mentioned how you were three the last time the Orioles won the World Series. I was like 6 months old when the Jays won in 93. So for me, I've never seen them. I haven't seen them win a playoff game in 10 years. it's been a rough go. Yeah. But for me, like you mentioned like that 8 or 9 year old mark. And yeah, for me, it was Carlos Delgado, Roy Halladay in the early 2000s for the Blue Jays, who made me fall in love with baseball.
Exactly.
And then obviously like you talk about young kids these days, like for me, like I remember where I was 10 years ago when Jose Bautista hit the famous bat flip home run against Texas in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Of course you would hate that guy. We hate Darren O'Day too, but, but like, yeah, for me and Ryan Mountcastle, that guy just can't stop hitting home runs against us. But,
yeah. He's a menace.
Yeah. He's an absolute
forward
menace.
To that opening day home run.
Oh man. I'm waiting for it. Yeah, especially Berríos is known to give up a few home runs. But we'll get into that. But yeah, I know like you talk about having 8 or 9 year old kids. Like for me, I remember those days for me. And, you know, as an umpire here, I see, you know, how big baseball gets in the younger age groups when the Blue Jays are doing well. You see like the next year, the Blue Jays go on a playoff run. The next year, there's like 50 more kids signing up to play baseball. It's wild how much of an impact those teams can make. And like where I live, it's a 3.5-hour to 4-hour flight to Toronto from where I live. Like it's our closest ballparks are Minneapolis, Denver, and Seattle, and they're all like 16-hour drives. So I'm nowhere near Toronto, but the Jays being Canada's only team and getting, you know, nationwide media coverage, they're huge. Like they're the only ticket in town essentially for, you know, watching a ball game on TV. Outside of Sunday night baseball, and besides that, like it's just ingrained into the community at this point. So I totally understand like
I feel where you're coming from there. I feel so lucky and blessed that I grew up with Cal Ripken Jr.
Yes.
And to have as my childhood idol and to have him play his entire career with the Orioles. Because I saw kids fall in love with the Orioles when we had a little resurgence, I don't know, 10 years ago. And kids fell in love with Manny Machado. And then he leaves. And that's hard. And that's part of baseball now. And it's why we're seeing people become fans of players more than teams as kids grow up in all of sports because of free agency. And I feel so blessed that, for me, it was Cal Ripken Jr. It will always be Cal Ripken Jr.
Let's talk about the Iron Man, because this is a guy, I mean, aside from being like a 19-time All-Star, World Series champion, two-time AL MVP, I mean, the list of accolades that Cal Ripken Jr. Accumulated is just, it would take an entire episode for us to list them all. But first ballot, almost 100% of the vote.
98.5.
Let's talk about what he means to Baltimore, but also, like, I want to hear, like, you've got to have a Cal Ripken Jr. rookie card somewhere.
You know, I do not have his rookie card. Well, that's not true. I have a box in the garage full of baseball cards. There's probably one in there. That is true. But no, no one means as much to baseball and Baltimore. Well, there's two guys. There's Brooks Robinson was Mr. Oriole. No one meant as much to the city as Brooks Robinson before he passed. And that is because the impact that Cal made on my life is the same impact Brooks made on so many men through championship seasons. And Brooks Robinson will always be Mr. Oriole. But right there behind him, Cal Ripken Jr., the fact that when we got new ownership last year, the fact that he's just listed as a minority owner and that he's now showing back up at games just excites everyone, because how much he means to this city is we give him so much credit for just playing the game and being a good guy. There's not many negative stories about Cal Ripken. When the baseball strike happened in my, in 94, I think 93, 94, something like that. They give a lot of credit to him in that streak for bringing excitement back to baseball, because that was slightly before the steroid era. And the steroid era, that became, the home runs became the must watch. But right before that, it was, hey, this guy's going to break that record. So in many ways, I think he saved baseball. Now, baseball has its ebbs and flows, and that was just at one point. Baseball will need saved again. It always does. But I think Cal Ripken Jr. meant a lot to baseball, but to the city, he's a king. He can do no wrong.
I can definitely see that. I don't think there's really a baseball equivalent of Cal Ripken on that same level for Toronto. You'd have to go to other sports, I think.
No. Well, 21 years he was an Oriole and played in every day.
Yeah.
So very few cities are going to find someone to represent that. You've got guys that are the face of the organization because they were there during winning seasons. Cal only got the one World Series in 83. But just the longevity, you don't see that anymore.
Yeah, not at all. And I mean, because players will, obviously, like, we could talk about Manny Machado and chasing the money or what have you. But I mean, to me, when I think about the Orioles, I always think number one, I think of Brooks Robinson, because I don't think people don't understand how valuable a player Brooks Robinson was, because not as many fans will appreciate defense, and Brooks was probably the best defender at third base of all time, maybe within the infield. You could make the case. And it's just kind of interesting to me to think about how the franchise itself is like over 100 years old, but it was in a different city before that.
Yes.
But I mean, it's the Orioles, to me, when I think about Baltimore, I always think about how the Orioles are like the beating heart of the city. Is that the case? Like, is that how powerful their influence is within the city?
They are. You know, we went through 14 losing seasons in a row to start the 2000s. And that really kills a fan base.
Yeah.
And we had a and we had bad owners, where we had the Angelos family, who I believe has been voted over and over again as the second worst owner in all of sports, only to Dan Snyder over in Washington.
Yeah.
So we've had things to kind of push fans away. But when you win, there's nothing like seeing going in Baltimore and everyone's got the Oriole hats out. Everyone's, yeah, they are. This is, there's always the stupid argument. Is Baltimore a baseball town or a football town? Well, the heart is a baseball town. It just happens to be that the Ravens just have a longevity of being good and always being in it. So that helps. But baseball is a Baltimore town, and winning shows that. As we win more, fans come back. We did lose a big fan base when the Washington Nationals came to Washington, because we lost that outside money. We lost that Bethesda, Washington, D.C. crowd that would drive in, because that's only a 45-minute drive.
Yep.
So that did hurt us, but we have rebuilt with young cores and young guys that are really hard not to root for, guys to be excited about, and you're seeing every year more and more fans come back. You're seeing more season ticket holders. You're seeing more just Oriole hats when you go out to eat. When you go out to a bar, the game's on. So it's definitely the heart of the city, and it is coming back and strong.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right about wanting to root for these players. I will say, like, personally, during the 2010s particularly, it felt like the Jays and the Orioles were closer to being rivals than any other period of time team's existence.
Machado and Batista, yeah.
And I hated the Orioles in the 2010s. So when Encarnacion hit that home run, that no-doubter, off Ubaldo Jimenez, one of the most baffling decisions I've ever seen a manager make.
I agree.
When it comes to a pitching choice. But for you guys, that must have been heartbreaking, knowing that your next opponent was going to be a Texas Rangers team who, I would argue, wasn't going to be good enough to beat either team.
Right.
So it was like a juicy opportunity to kind of battle your way into the ALCS for the first time in, oh God, a very long time, at least a couple decades.
Yeah, no, it was very frustrating, and weeks, years of what was Buck thinking? Why are you bringing the guy we can't trust? Because you're trying to save your closer who could have been lights out and gotten you to the next inning. And it's a question we will always shake our head at.
But that being said, the reason why I bring it up is because these two teams are division rivals, but the rivalry, I would argue, has cooled off a little bit because either team has been crappy and that both teams haven't been good at the same time in a little while. But now all of a sudden, the Orioles, I would argue, Justin, you may want to rebuttal on this, but I would argue that the Orioles in a short period of time managed to surpass Toronto when it came to the quality of their drafted players. Gunnar Henderson, the rise of him, kind of Bo Bichette lives in that shadow now.
Yeah.
And will continue to, especially after having a bad season last year.
I think the biggest thing, Patrick, that Baltimore did differently than the Blue Jays is they actually did a full-scale rebuild, right? Like the Blue Jays haven't done that in, you know, a couple decades now, where they've just torn it all down. They've just kind of been this team who will retool and, you know, finish fourth or fifth in the division last year, and then they're going to try and win it again this year. Like there's never been a time where the Jays have had so many, you know, top draft picks. Like we were talking about before Josh joined us today, how the Orioles have, you know, six first-round draft picks in their starting lineup on any given day, and then Gunnar Henderson being a second round pick as well too. Like, there's just that homegrown rebuild where if you look at the Blue Jays outside of, you know, Vladdy and Bo, like Springer was an acquisition, Dalton Varsho was an acquisition. Like, they bring in Anthony Santander, signed from Baltimore. Like, there's, they bring in guys from the outside to fill out amongst like a couple of star players, whereas the Orioles have drafted, you know, six or seven studs in the last decade who are now just tearing it up. So it's a bit of a difference in how the teams did their rebuilds.
Yeah.
Now those years of the rebuild sucked.
Oh yeah.
Because we were just going into the season knowing, hey, we're bad. Mm-hmm. But like, it is paying off right now. Yes.
Yeah, we kind of felt and that I way with the Blue Jays last year. Like, it was going to be a painful year, and boy, we were right.
I think this year the AL East is going to be so tight.
Yeah.
That it's built for rivalries. Because I really think top to bottom. First place to last place is going to be about a 5-game swing.
You look at any of the projection sites, right? I mean, Fangraphs has the Yankees winning it with 86 wins and the Blue Jays and Rays being an 83 and 82 respectively. So yeah, that's a four win difference between first and last, right?
Yeah. But one bad, and that's the thing, is one bad injury flips that entire division around.
Yeah. Or, you know, say Baltimore.
You don't even need to be injured, just a losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned at the top, like, starting off with four games in Toronto, like, if one team could, you know, win three of four, that puts them on the right foot right away against the other, against that head-to-head record, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, and you guys will be at the bottom.
Big start. Yeah, we could be.
All right.
But
let's get into
the season here. Yeah, I know. Baltimore had some pretty big roster turnover this offseason. Hey, like, obviously with Corbin Burnes and Anthony Santander signing elsewhere, that left a couple of big holes to fill. How would you rate what the Orioles did this offseason, and, you know, bringing in guys like Sagano from Japan and then Tyler O'Neill as well as kind of the two big acquisitions? How would you kind of grade how they did?
Well, let's start with Santander, your guy, because the biggest, most obvious thing at the end of the season was that he was not returning for the Orioles.
Right.
Because we have too much long-term depth for outfielders, that it just didn't make sense to pay him that money.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so intrigued by Tyler O'Neill. He's a big guy. He puts up runs. He has trouble staying healthy. That's the knock against him.
Yeah.
But that's what we are okay with, because we have young guys ready to platoon.
Right.
So if we can keep him healthy, I could see him replacing Anthony's numbers, no problem.
Yeah, we love Tyler O'Neill too. He's from Canada, so
He's got the strength. So I love that move. I'm very happy with that positioning. With losing Corbin, everybody wanted Corbin back, but that's because he was so good.
Yeah,
and I can't be mad about Corbin Burnes. We made him an offer, and I'm told we made him a decent offer. But I've been where Corbin Burnes is with my day job. I've had to make that decision where it's like, well, no, I'll take a little less money to spend more time around my family.
Totally.
He has a house there. He has three kids. They're young.
Yeah.
He can do spring training in Arizona and play in Arizona and live in Arizona where he already lives in the offseason. Mm-hmm. That's a no-brainer. They were paid him enough to make it worth it for him. And I would, as a man, I would make that choice too.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, do I wish the Orioles went out and signed a big name pitcher to replace him? Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Do I understand that our rotation, we have some guys injured, but if everyone gets back healthy, we have kind of a surplus, which is an interesting place to be in. And I know that makes it then tough as a front office on how to handle, because you're not going to go sign Scherzer for multiple years. You're not going to give him 2-3 years because, well, I've got Tyler Wells and Kyle Bradish, two guys who are solid starting pitchers. Kyle Bradish might be a Cy Young potential, And those guys are due to be back in July of this season. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what do forget this season, long term, no top of the line rotation guy wants to sign a 1 year deal. And do I need him for multiple years? Yeah, it's always good, but I could use that money elsewhere, especially when I have young guys that are going to want contract extensions or sign-ins in the near future. So I understand not going out and getting a big name as much as I would like it. I think we really need to talk about Grayson Rodriguez's injury.
Yeah.
Because that's the big red flag that wasn't expected. And I think the first time was when he pitched and his speed wasn't where it should be. And they said, don't worry about his velocity. It's fine. It's just spring training. Then 2 days later, they came out and said, oh, well, he's sore. he's got a, but they said, don't worry. It's not a, it's not Tommy John. It's not a major injury. I forget what they said it was.
Yeah, they're calling it triceps and elbow tightness or something.
Yes, but they're being very clear to say, hey, it's not a tendon. It's nothing we need to do surgery on. But last night, they go out and sign Kyle Gibson.
Yeah.
Now, here, the funny part is, if you signed Kyle Gibson 2 weeks ago, when Grayson Rodriguez was healthy, I would have been excited and said, hey, this is a guy who puts up lots of innings. He's going to give us that depth. He's going to allow us to let Segura adjust to a five-man rotation. Maybe we'll do a six-man and let him adjust to Major League Baseball. It gives us space. It gives us flexibility. It gives us a veteran presence that's cheap, $5 million. That's cheap for a starter that's going to put up 150, 190 innings.
Yeah.
But the fact that they do it right after the Grayson injury, it makes you panic and say, is there something they're not telling us about Grayson?
Yeah, because it's. I mean, there's no way he's ready for opening day at this point. He hasn't pitched in a couple weeks now.
They've already announced he will be on the IL.
Yeah, just remains to be seen like how long that injury takes. I mean, for a pitcher to get hurt during spring training, that's the worst time of year because you're ramping up at that time.
Yes.
So even if he's you know healthy enough to be throwing off a mound in a week from now, like it's probably going to take him 3 weeks just to get built back up in minor league rehab.
Well, and that's where the timing with Gibson gets more confusing.
Yeah.
Because Gibson's not ready to pitch. He won't be pitching next week. He's got to ramp up as well. He hasn't been in spring training.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at, all right, well, best case scenario, Grayson's ready in 3 weeks. Well, that's when Gibson would be ready as well.
Yeah.
So what are you not telling me? Hopefully it's just Gibson wanted to wait out and see if he could get a long-term deal from anyone. He couldn't. So then he just called Mike back and said, hey, I love the Orioles. I love these young guys. I'll come on back. Hopefully it's something like that, but we don't know.
Yeah, it's a little bit suspicious, to say the least, at the timing.
Right. Now, the fact that Kyle Gibson was here in 2023 when Adley and Gunnar made their first seasons and came up here and got to know these young guys, and the fact that we know him, he knows us, he knows Camden Yards, makes it as a guy that I wanted all offseason. So it's a perfect fit. We have to be concerned about Grayson, which sucks.
For sure. And then sticking with your guys' rotation, obviously bringing in old Uncle Charlie here to come throw some innings for you, 41 years old. What are you looking for from old Charlie this season?
An inning eater, where we have a guy that's going to protect our bullpen, where we've got guys that it's hard to say because I saw Grayson. Like Eflin, Eflin's going to get you six innings.
Yeah,
Charlie Morton's going to get you six innings. Kyle Gibson's going to get you six innings. That does a lot for our bullpen as far as shortening games.
For sure.
And when we have Batista coming back from injury, I have no concerns about Batista. I know he's going to be lights out. But I don't want to put that pressure on him right away, especially the first couple weeks. Let's let him ease into this. We'll still bring him to close. But let's not put it all on his shoulders. And I love the fact that we've got guys that we can count on keeping us in ball games, because I truly believe offensively we've got one of the best lineups in baseball, which means if you can get pitchers that can keep games within reach, I think we can win those games.
For sure. I mean, having guys like Yennier Cano in your back end of your bullpen, so Anthony Dominguez is looking like he's going to have a pretty good year for you. And then obviously Bautista at the back is One of the best clues in baseball.
Now, while we're talking about rotation, we have to talk about Seguna.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him next.
Yeah.
35 years old from Japan. That's an interesting one.
I'll let you know now.
Okay.
He will win Rookie of the Year.
Okay.
He looks outstanding.
All right.
I know. But he looks outstanding in Sarasota. And right now, if he can pitch the way he's doing, he just gave up his, I think Thursday, he just gave up his first run of spring training.
Right.
But
yeah, I think so, yeah.
He is 35 years old. And I get that. He's old. But it's his first year in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
And we've seen other players transition well into Major League Baseball. So Seguna, I'm sure, has those guys to talk to, the Otanis and stuff. He's got those relationships to help make the transition easier.
Yeah.
And I truly think he is going to be the talk of the MLB this year.
Well, you look at just his Japan League stats as well. He's never been a guy who's given up a ton of home runs. He doesn't walk people. Like he's the kind of starter that you want on a team who needs inning eaters, right? And I mean, his they don't pitch as many games in Japan as they do in Major League Baseball. So I mean, he did throw 156 innings last year in Japan. So it's not like he's a guy who can only throw you 120. He's going to be out there every 5 days.
Yeah, he did pitch in the World Baseball Classic a few
years ago. Yep,
he let up one run.
Yep.
So
no, he was very good there.
Face
I remember
a few major
him
leaders.
Too.
But
yeah,
I think I love that deal so much.
Yeah, that was definitely a big one, and I think obviously with Otani and Sasaki and being like the big Japanese players in baseball, he kind of flew under the radar a little bit this winter with that signing in Baltimore,
totally.
And I didn't seem to too many people talking about Sagano, but I did see a couple of his spring starts and was like, wow, this guy is actually really good.
And there's no pressure on him. Because I mentioned we've got the top of the rotation nailed down with those veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this guy on the back end who's just going to slowly work his innings up. And suddenly we'll be like, oh, you know what? He's doing really well.
Yeah. Now, with all this talk kind of being said about injuries and everything else, what's your expectation for this team? Like, where should they finish, in the American League East? Are they a wild card team? Are they a division contender? Like, what's the thoughts around Baltimore?
I wear orange color glasses.
So
you're going to make fun of me, but I'm expecting 92 wins.
Okay.
I think there's no way this team doesn't. This team is better than last year's team. And there's no, when I look around, the Yankees have gotten better. The Red Sox have gotten better. The Blue Jays have gotten better. The Rays have gotten better. Everyone's gotten better. But the Orioles won 91 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with Jackson Holliday playing like crap.
He
was horrible. So he can only go up. And then you've got guys like Colton Cowser building on a good rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Adley Rutschman who Adley had a down year last year. The stats don't show it, but he does. And he didn't pass the eye test, and he looked overweight, and people hate that I say that, but he was overweight last summer. This year, he's looking better. I hear he broke up with his girlfriend. That might be part of it, but he's looking good. So
he just feels
excited.
He's focused on baseball.
Right, exactly. So I'm excited that I see, like, how can this team lose more games with Jackson Holliday playing like a Major League Baseball player and Adley Rutschman being better?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I think
offensively, you guys
And I
great.
Think Gunnar Henderson's going to be in the MVP talks.
Again,
so there's no way for this team to go down except for injuries and the fact that everyone else got better, but I'm still going with 92 wins.
Counterpoint.
The AL East is going to beat up on the rest of the divisions.
Mm-hmm.
I also think they're going to beat up on each other, so that's going to be interesting. My counterpoint to this is, while I would agree with you, I think their offense is probably top five in baseball.
Oh,
yeah. We didn't mention it in the acquisitions, but shout out to Gary Sanchez. You know, you're gonna get you're gonna get home runs from him. You're gonna get a lot of strikeouts too. But
I don't know if I like that move, but it's
there. It's there. We'll see.
Take a look at Samuel Basalo, our Triple A catcher, who is probably ready for the big leagues. And
I think he's fifth overall in baseball or something right now. He's pretty high up there in the prospect rankings. Yeah, the kid hits bombs too.
Yeah, so he's projected for next year, but I think Sanchez is holding him back a little this year because they didn't want to put the pressure on him, but I think we'll see him midseason.
Yeah, and then I mean Sanchez is an easy move or a DFA when the time
yeah, it was
right,
a cheap
you know?
Move to just let yeah. go when the time
yeah,
comes.
For sure.
I got to hit you with the counterpoint, though, with respect. Looking at Charlie Morton and Kyle Gibson and Sagano, they're not spring chickens. And
no.
baseball is such that the decline after, you know, 35, 36 can come on rapidly. We are almost certainly going to see a different type of Max Scherzer than what we've seen in years past. And I make no qualms about that. Like, yeah. we've talked about it before, and when we do our preview, we'll talk about what our expectations are for Max Scherzer. They're not very high. but that being said, when I look at Baltimore's rotation, I would be more concerned because of these guys who are long in the tooth being relied upon for those heavy innings. So it makes me wonder whether or not, you know, if all things work out well, like you said, sure.
Totally.
92 wins, I could see it. I could also see them collapsing around the end of the year with these older guys just not being able to put up the innings anymore.
And that's where you're not paying attention to our depth, where we've got this guy, Cade Povich, who I think is going to make the team, but mm-hmm. I think he'll be sent down as soon as Grayson's better or as soon as Gibson's ready to come back. He is a guy who he got some starts under his belt last year. I think he's a really good rotation pitcher. I think he's going to make his way there. And as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at July timeframes for Tyler Wells and Kyle Bradish to come back. That's right. Like, it's going to be interesting because that's the time where you make a move, you make a trade to take you to that next level and push you into the postseason. And the Orioles already have that in-house. So those are going to be interesting moves for the rotation as well.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah, I think I kind of agree with Patrick. For me, I was asking myself, you know, if for the Orioles to win the division, what goes right? And you talked about injuries. Obviously, the offense being, you know, among the top in baseball, they're going to hit a lot of home runs this year, even with, you know, losing Santander, but you brought on O'Neill to fill that gap.
And we also brought our wall in.
Yeah, brought the wall back in left field. That's going to help. That's going to help the Blue Jays out, too,
no
when we come visit Camden.
No Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah, Ryan Mountcastle had a bad year last year just with that wall. He was not having a good time. Well, I know I had him in fantasy, and it was bad.
Well, I think what... It's easy to look at Ryan Mountcastle and see, oh, well, he would have had 10 more home runs. But what you can't see with Ryan Mountcastle is how much he adjusted his swing to avoid the ball.
Yeah, to try and go the other way, right? And
yes, or to try to hit line drives instead of go over. Stuff that he's not supposed to be doing.
We talked about that, the Blue Jays hitting philosophy the last few years and the move away from just trying to hit bombs and trying to hit line drives. And some guys just, that's not who they are. They hit home runs, right? So
right.
Yeah, no, totally see that. And I mean, yeah, there's so much data that showed that, yeah, that wall moving back just neutered a bunch of guys, right? They took everyone's power away. That was a big change.
Yeah, so now it's about half of where it used to be.
Yeah, so that's so good. I liked that they moved it back. They just did way too much. It was big of a change all at once.
Correct.
But for me, when I look at this Orioles team, yeah, if everything goes right, I think you're not far off with the, you know, 90, 92 wins, somewhere in that range. Like they have the bats for it. If Bradish and Wells can come back mid-season and be, you know, who they were before their injuries, or the rest of the season, that's totally not out of the question. My concern, along with Patrick's, is just, you know, the health of this team. Like, is Bautista going to be okay for the full season coming off Tommy John surgery? That's a big question mark for me as an outside fan looking in. And, you know, what are you going to get from, you know, guys like Dean Kremer and Cade Povich in the interim? I know, yeah, you mentioned Povich as being a guy with high potential. I mean, yes, there's definitely some signs of that last year. Capable of striking a lot of guys out, but still, you know, coming into, you know, first full big league season now, expectations are going to be a little bit higher for him in the meantime until those guys come back. So I don't know, like for me, the rotation's really the only question mark I have when I look at this Baltimore team, just in terms of, you know, the overall, I think the ceiling at the start of the season is a little low with the guys that are in the rotation now, but the floor is also pretty high. Like, they're not going to be terrible, but for me, I would worry that, you know, the offense is going to have to score a ton of runs to, to win a lot of these games early on.
Yeah.
And they're definitely capable of it. But if everything goes right, this team wins 90-92 games. If everything goes wrong, they could be, you know, in a dogfight to get that last wild card spot. I think they're a playoff team regardless.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But it's going to determine, I think, the health and the effectiveness of the rotation, at least to start the year, is really going to determine, you know, what caliber of playoff team this team will be.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll have three of the teams in the AL East will be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a lock. Yeah, this year with how, like you mentioned, everyone improved. The Yankees, you know, no Gerrit Cole, no Juan Soto.
That's good for all of us.
Absolutely. And bad for the Bronx Bombers. And I mean, then you always have the question marks of can Giancarlo Stanton, you know, stay healthy as well too. I mean, he hit a lot of home runs for them in the playoffs and was really good for them. But you need him to be healthy.
Same with Judge as he gets older.
Yeah, Judge too. I think them not having to put Judge in center field anymore is going to be nice for them. Because, you know, center fielders just take a beating. Mike Trout's moving to right field this year for the Angels in hopes that he can stay healthy for once in his life, which would be great because I love Mike Trout. But but yeah, I mean, there's so many moves that are made within this division. The team that I'm not hearing anybody talk about is Tampa Bay. And, you know, they're always pesky and they always find a way to just bring these pitchers up out of nowhere from their minor league system and have them, you know, throw gas until they get Tommy John surgery. But I think Tampa Bay is still my dark horse team in this division. I mean, everyone talks about the Yankees, everyone talks about the Red Sox, the Orioles and the Blue Jays have been there and around the conversation the last handful of years, but Tampa always slips under the radar. And I think that they're going to be the team that could play, you know, spoiler for the rest of this division. Because
why I can't buy the Rays this year.
Okay, the ballpark
is because they have to play in that Steinbrenner Field,
that Mickey Mouse Stadium. But that could be a benefit to them, right? So
well, field gameplay maybe, but it means the clubhouse is a downgrade. The culture is a downgrade. The crowd is a downgrade.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that are going to hurt that are the intangibles of baseball. Where 100%. They're playing on a slightly smaller field, maybe. But there's a lot of downsides.
Yeah, we saw the Blue Jays having to do that during the COVID seasons, you know, not playing any games in Toronto in 2020 and then only half of the season in 2021. It definitely was a big downer for fans to not be able to see ball games, and I'm sure for the players too.
Plus the heat. No one's talking about the fact that Tampa plays indoors, so they don't have to deal with that July heat.
And the rain too.
Yeah, I didn't even think about rain outs, yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a mess down there this year for those games.
I think it's going to be a miserable season for Tampa, and that's why.
That's fair. No, that's very fair, but I don't know. I've come to the realization over the years that the moment that anyone counts Tampa out is when they just do what they did a couple of years ago and win, you know, like 20 games and three losses out of the season.
They're always there. Yeah.
While they do have the best manager in baseball, mm-hmm. I would argue, I would also say that they don't have their tricks in the bag anymore, right? They've lost some players that were impact players. We don't have to get into all of them and why they're no longer in the league or doing other things, but I mean, like, they don't have Ryan Yarbrough anymore. You know what I mean? I know every chance I get to talk about Ryan Yarbrough, I throw it in there. But why. I mean,
it's this weird fascination.
Oh, whatever. Just let me have my thing. But I like this. Let's keep up this momentum of talking shit about these other teams that we've got to deal with. I honestly think, like, when I look at the Yankees, I think that losing Gerrit Cole is actually devastating to them. Their answer to that was, I guess it's either, you could look at it as like Carlos Carrasco or Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman went from being almost certainly coming out of the bullpen to now he's, you know, his starting pitching spot is secured, but he's going to be 34. Carlos Carrasco is 38 and he's a non-roster invitee. And bafflingly, Fangraphs has him relatively high ranked in the power rankings, despite, you know, mostly losing his stuff and being 38 years old. But I mean, if I look at this team, like, their bullpen is projected to be quite strong, but I don't think it's that strong though. I don't know. They're missing pieces that were kind of making it what it was. I don't think Mark Leiter Jr. is as good as what Fangraphs thinks he is. I see a lot of like really overrating on a lot of these guys. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Yankees? And like, let it rip when it comes to the hate. Let it flow through you.
Yeah, I don't like the Yankees. Nobody likes the Yankees. The Yankees have the worst fans in baseball, though the Red Sox fans are trying to catch up. They're trying to catch up. But no one wants the Yankees. The Yankees think they are the royalty of baseball. And sure, they had good guys years, whatever, before we were all born. That's great, and honor those guys. But you're not the royalty of baseball. I don't care that you don't put your names on your shirts because your fans all do. Mm-hmm. And the best thing about the Yankee uniforms is that you love your uniforms so much you refuse to do City Connects, so we didn't get some stupid, ugly uniform.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But
they're beat up.
They're totally beat up. They've got injuries.
Stanton's got tennis elbow in both his arms.
That's wild.
And what's great is the New York media doesn't care.
Yeah.
They will still be angry and freak out and not allow this team to get healthy. So we'll have to see what they do. But they're always there. They'll spend the money. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, they've tried to spend the money. I mean, Ohtani didn't want to go there. Right. Soto didn't want to stay.
How great is it that the Dodgers outspending the Yankees?
That's doing the exact same thing
on the West Coast and keeping those players out of here.
Yeah,
good.
See the Dodgers for one series a year. Like, it's perfect. It's excellent.
We'll go to that series to see Ohtani.
Yeah.
And then he can leave town.
He can leave town and come back in 2 years. Yeah, it's definitely the good thing about Soto being out of the division too. I mean, having to see the Mets only once a season is very, very nice as well. But it's going to be an interesting year because we look at this division and man, it's like everyone. You can make a case for any team, I think, to win the division. Maybe not Tampa winning the division, but I think there's a case to be made for the other four teams where, you know, if everything goes right, they could all easily win the division. Or if things go wrong, you could see, you know, three out of the five teams miss the playoffs if there's, you know, injury concerns or underperformance. Like the Blue Jays for us, I mean, we talk about them all winter and all season too, but we've been so critical over the way that this team's been, you know, ran the last couple of years with, you know, the offensive approach and just getting away from hitting home runs that made this team so good in the last part of the 2010s. You look at the Blue Jays and they need things to go right too. They need George Springer to not have a 500 OPS. They need, you know, Vladdy to be an MVP. They need Bo Bichette to stay healthy and, you know, be an all-star again. Like there's this whole checklist of items that have to go right. So I think like Baltimore has a lot more wiggle room than most teams in this division, just based on the depth, like you mentioned, of their offense. With those guys coming back from injury in the rotation, like the wiggle room is, the floor is a lot higher than most teams, and the ceiling is like through the roof. Like this team could, you know, win anywhere from 85 to 100 games depending on what happens this year. Whereas the Blue Jays are hoping to win like 86 and squeak into the playoffs if everything goes absolutely perfectly right. So there's different ways that this is going to happen. And when I look at the division, for me, Baltimore gives me the scaries as like the other team that the Jays will have to play this year is you know, they've got that young swagger, obviously having Gunnar Henderson and hopefully not being out for too much longer here. I think he's supposed to, you know, get into some at bats or something soon, but
he should be all right.
Yeah. Hopefully he's okay and doesn't miss too much time. Cause for the Blue Jays, it's great if Gunnar Henderson's not on the field, but it's bad for baseball. And I mean, you want to see the best players on the field at all times. So as much as we can, you know, not be terribly upset about not having to face Garrett Cole this year, it still sucks to not have the best players on the field. I'm hoping Gunnar Henderson's back because I'd love to see, you know, best on best when the season starts.
Hyde's comment yesterday about Gunnar Henderson was, "We're still hopeful, but we're running out of time."
So yeah,
that doesn't excite me.
The Jays are in that same boat with Dalton Varsho, our center fielder. Like he's hitting the ball, but he's recovering from off season shoulder surgery. That's a tongue twister for me. And he's not throwing long enough distance yet to be healthy for opening day. So they're kind of in the same boat with another one of their starters as well. So,
but that's where baseball's a long sport. You want these guys to take it easy. You want them to make it miss
162.
Go ahead and miss the first week or two if you're going to get the rest in.
100%. Yeah, you miss 2 weeks and you still have 150 games to play. So It's
let's do a lightning round on your expectations of individual Oriole players. We're gonna do this like super fast. I think I'm gonna try to get through, you know, who's projected to be on this this roster opening day. So I'm not gonna mention any of the guys who have injuries. This is just what I'm seeing in front of me as far as like who's gonna be on the Orioles, after the first pitch is thrown on March 27th. We talked about Gunnar already. Adley Rutschman, you know, what are your hopes and dreams for him going into this season?
Better than last season, maybe 20 home runs, a high two, flirting with three batting average, and really just healthy and being there every day.
Cedric Mullins.
Oh, I am kind of burned on Cedric Mullins. I think we are coming to the end of the Cedric Mullins era. He's either going to do really good or he's going to put up really bad numbers. I see low twos for him. He'll still put up a few home runs, maybe let's say 15. And I don't know. I think we're going to see him platooned more is what I'm going to see. I think this year.
Yeah, he still steals bases for you guys too, which is a nice thing to have.
He does.
Who's he platoon with then if he's...
I think Colton Cowser. Because we've got an interesting outfield where we've got Colton Cowser, Cedric Mullins, Tyler O'Neill, but then we've got Heston Kerstead as well. And we've got... We've signed some other guys that I'm blanking on right now as well.
Heston Kerstead's an interesting guy. I mean, he's got that power potential that, you know, for a corner outfielder, you just hope that he can figure it out in bigs.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing is, I don't think he's been given a fair shot yet to figure that out in the big leagues.
What did he get? Yeah, he got like 100 plate appearances last year. Yeah.
And we've got O'Hearn that's going to get some time out there.
Yep.
Dylan Carlson's an interesting case for out there. Ramon Laureano's having a decent spring. So I think there's some depth there, which is going to allow you to platoon Cedric.
Fair enough. Jordan Westberg, your third baseman.
Yeah. He is my favorite Oriole.
Wow.
And because... I think he's right up there with Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, but nobody talks about him.
Yeah, he flew under the radar
last
year.
He came in behind them. He came in while everyone's attention was on Jackson Holliday as he progressed in the minors. And he snuck in here, and I think he's just a reliable guy. He's going to hit high 200s. He's going to get you 20-some home runs. He's going to get you a bunch of RBIs, and he is an outstanding defender. So I think he's going to be the almost everyday third baseman this year.
We've already talked a little bit about Colton Cowser, but what do you want to see from Colton specifically that you haven't seen yet from him?
Consistency. Most young guys, that's what you need is consistency. We've seen outbursts. We've seen he's got the power. We've seen he's got the defensive range that he can play center field. With the last couple of years having left field wall extra deep, it was like we had two center fields to cover in Camden Yard. So we've seen that what that did is allow us to get outfielders that could play center field. So that's where I see Colton as he can play left field, he can play right field, he can play center field, he can play them all, and that's going to keep him in the lineup. And I think as long as he can hit the ball, we need his strikeout numbers to go down. That was a problem last year.
Yeah,
it's going to be But I think up. If he can... make contact, get 20-some home runs, he's going to be exciting.
Canadian Bacon, Tyler O'Neill. This is interesting to me because he didn't really have a great couple of years in St. Louis. Then he goes to Boston and he just kind of blows the barn doors open. He
started hitting bombs again.
Yeah, he started smoking bombs. I don't know.
Totally.
What do you need from him this year?
I think he's going to be platooned. And I think we're going to see him in that DH slot to keep him healthy. And I think, again, it's with all these Orioles, it's about the home runs. And it's about getting him 20, 25 home runs. I think he had 30-some with Boston last year.
So yeah, including, I think he hit just as many on the road as he did at Fenway. So it wasn't even just Fenway, right?
Exactly. And that's what he was brought in to replace the Santander home runs. So that's my projections is the long ball.
We talked about Ryan O'Hearn. It's interesting to me. Fangraphs has him slotted in as the DH, but obviously you're saying that he's going to get some playing time.
DH will be fluid, yeah.
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 The Orioles, I think you're seeing a lot of teams do this, where the DH becomes a day off for guys because you have so much flexibility. Because Ryan O'Hearn, he can play right field, he can play first base or DH, so you've got flexibility to let's get a guy break. I am not that high on Ryan O'Hearn. But not because he's not a bad player. He's a fine player. And it's nice to have that left-handed bat there.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like sometimes he's in the way of a guy like Kobe Mayo and Heston Kerstad getting a shot up here.
Right.
Yeah,
other guys who
I can see that.
Could be in that DH role with a little playing time in the field. And I think really it all depends on Ryan Mountcastle. And as long as he has an improved year after having a down year last year, then I don't know where Ryan O'Hearn truly fits without just blocking people.
Yeah, and speaking of Mountcastle, he battles vertigo. Is that correct? Like he has that.
He did last year. He had a vertigo issue.
Yeah, he's had a couple times in his career.
Yeah, last year I think he missed like 2 weeks though with it.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I don't know how you address that necessarily.
Yeah, it's tough to predict. I mean, you know he's going to hit 400 against the Blue Jays, but that's how he does against everybody else, right?
Right, he's going to play well in Toronto. He had it's interesting because you look and I keep thinking, well, his stats were down last year because that was the eye test. When you look on paper, he had the same batting average. He went from 270 to 271 last year.
Yeah.
And his home runs were down. And that was the big thing with him is his home runs were down because they moved that wall.
Yeah.
So he went from 2021 where he got 33 home runs, 2022 he got 22 home runs, 18 and 13. Well, what happened in 2022? They moved the wall.
They moved the wall.
And we've seen that. And why did it go down? Why did his home run numbers go down even more in 2023 and 2024? Because he's been trying to adjust.
Yeah, changing his swing.
He's been trying. His double numbers have gone up while his home run numbers have gone down. Right. So I'm really looking at those home run numbers going up. He was really patient at the plate last year, which was good to see. So I think we'll continue to see his walks go up and his home runs go up.
Let's talk about Jackson Holliday. First overall pick, obviously. Rookie season. Okay.
Not good at all. Horrible.
Yeah, what do you think they brought him up too early, or was it just he just sucked?
I don't think they brought him up too early. But he did not adapt as soon as he should have been able to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good for him because he now has something to prove. And I think Jackson Holliday is the classic kid who has always been amazing at every level, where his entire life he's been the best ball player on the team. And he got humbled last year. And he had to learn last year how to deal with struggles. And I think that's new to him. And I think that sent him into this offseason with that in mind. And he's got, if you talk about a guy who's got everything, all the support he needs with his dad and his brother.
His dad is pretty good.
And that means close family and friends. He's got all the support they're needed. So I know he put on a lot more muscle and strength this year, and I think we'll see how that plays out. Spring training, it's been interesting to watch him because they've been having him steal like every time he gets on base.
Yeah.
And he's gotten thrown out most of the time.
But he's got the wheels to do it, right?
Exactly. So it's like when you look at, well, what's this guy working on in Sarasota? For Jackson Holliday, it's stealing bases.
Yeah, he's 5 for 7 so far in steals.
All right. Well, then it's gotten better. So I think we'll see that improve this season. He's even hitting the ball good in Sarasota. He's got a .326 batting average right now. I don't see him hitting that in the big leagues, but I think high twos, why not?
The strikeouts should be down this year, hopefully. Hey,
should definitely be down.
Third of the time he was at the plate last year, he was striking out, so you'd hope to see that drop a bit.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, so, 2-5, something like that.
I think that'll be good, but then, like, the other thing I think that people forget about about Jackson Holliday's skill set is his approach at the plate. In every level that he has played up to, you know, when he's made his MLB debut, he has had tremendous ability to draw walks and get on base and then do something with his time on the base paths. And that's what makes him, I think, a special player, is that he's going to be an absolute terror when he does get on base, if they can lean into him using his skill set, his wheels.
Well, yeah, he's solid defensively too, which always helps.
Well, that's the other thing too, it's almost like he's like a 3.5 to 4 tool player, because he can do almost everything great, with the exception of, I mean, you know, with respect to him, I don't think his power is quite on the level of, you know,
some of the other 21 years old, right? That he's not, he's about to develop.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, what I see him as is, Fangraphs has him as the ninth, hitting ninth, which I'd be kind of curious if Gunnar Henderson can't, if he's not ready for the year, does Jackson Holliday get a whiff of shortstop? Like, because he has the ability to play short.
Yes. Okay. And I think that's what they're looking at. And I think he could also be, by the end of the season, he could be a leadoff hitter on his team.
That's what I was driving at. Yeah.
Because Gunnar Henderson's got more power. I'd much rather see Gunnar Henderson in that 2-3 hole. But I think you're not going to, after the season he had last year, you're not going to put him at leadoff on opening day. You're going to put him out there and you're going to let him work his way up there. But yes, I think we'll see him starting shortstop if Gunner's not ready to go.
Do you have any sort of beef with the way that the bullpen is currently constructed? I mean, obviously, there's some injuries and stuff like that, but like, what do you think is the weak link in the bullpen right now for the Orioles?
Brian Baker, maybe, but he's been working on apparently he worked on a new pitch that everyone's impressed with down in Sarasota. So maybe he's okay. I really like Yadier Cano.
Yeah,
and
terrific.
He really stepped up when we needed him, but then I saw him struggle a lot last season. So I like Batista, I like Cano, I like Dominguez. But outside of there, I'm kind of up in the air. I like Keegan Aiken. Keegan Aiken's really reliable.
I was going to ask you about Keegan Aiken specifically, because we like lefties on the podcast. We talk about lefties. We talk about lefty relievers all the time. You know, we had Tim Mayza before he imploded last year. And Keegan Aiken, to me, is kind of an interesting X factor in your bullpen. Like, I think he might be doing some heavy lifting.
No, I like Keegan Aiken so much. Keegan Aiken reminds me of Brian Mattis, we had in our rotation, and he was bad. Then we moved him into his bullpen, and he was a great guy in the bullpen. He was unhittable for David Ortiz, which was perfect for what you needed.
Best guy to have around the lineup for that,
exactly. And I see that. I see Keegan Aiken. I mean, if I look last year, he pitched in 66 games, 78 innings, 97 strikeouts. That's what you want out of your bullpen, is those strikeout numbers. So if I can get my starter 6 innings, and then I bring in Aiken, and then I bring in Cano
and Batista,
or Dominguez, and then I close the game out with Batista. It's the Yankees used to be able to do this when they had Mariano, where they would just shorten the games, where you knew if you didn't have the lead by the 7th inning, game was over.
Pretty much.
And I think the Orioles bullpen has potential to be there, but they also have potential to completely implode.
I think their bullpen is
stronger than the rotation.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But
you talked about it in the rotations part of the talk conversation earlier. Like you can, if you can get 6 innings out of your starting pitchers, you guys have and have a lead at that point.
Right.
Pretty good percentage chance you're going to win the game.
Yes. Yeah. But that's where a struggle in rotation could really wear down your bullpen,
especially if it's early in the year that there's some struggles, right?
Yes.
It's tough to keep a healthy bullpen if they're getting overworked at the beginning of the season.
Right. And the Orioles are just classic at, let's bring this guy up from Norfolk, bring this guy up. All right, he's up for one game, send him down, back and forth, trying to keep the bullpen healthy. And I'm hoping that maybe with some veterans this year, we don't need to go through that.
It was very recent but Andrew Kittredge had like a knee surgery there. I think it was like 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
I did not know this until I just read about it while we were talking. Is he going to be just a non-factor for the year with that injury? Or is he... What's the projections? Is there any word on that?
I don't remember the projections. I think it wasn't... It was not... It would see... We'd be seeing him in a month or two.
I think...
I don't think it was a major...
I was just looking at it here. He's projecting like June or around the All-Star break. Somewhere in June, right. July. So it's going to be a few months.
It sucks. But it's that whole thing where we look at that depth in July and kind of the reinforcements are coming.
You just got to get to July in a good position, right, as a team. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all about now, weathering the storm at the beginning of the year. For sure.
I also see all this as excuses for Mike Elias to not make a trade in July.
That's 100% what's going to happen. Is all these guys are going to come back and they're not going to make a trade. And they're still going to be, like we said.
It's
like, I think
going to work or it won't.
Yep.
Well, I think their floor is still like mid-80s to wins. Like their floor, like if nothing goes right, they're still going to be above 500. But if everything does go right, even if they don't make a trade, they're division contenders. Agreed. So I mean, there's good. The reinforcement thing, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I mean,
the Blue Jays are going to try to do it with Alec Manoa too, right? In the rotation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's the hope. But what Alec Manoa are you getting? Well, you never know. If we get Cy Young caliber Alec Manoa, then I definitely think that teams are going to struggle in the back half of the season playing the Jays, which is what we want.
Yeah.
But at the same time, look at the level of reinforcements that Baltimore is going to inherit in June, July, August. And it's I kind of see it because like, ultimately, I think what would be best for the team is guys like Morton. And then if Sagano is struggling or Gibson is struggling, for those guys to go away with the injury replacements. I don't think they need to tap into their prospect pool to trade. You guys are set up for like a decade.
It's crazy.
I think we're okay. Yes,
assuming you guys can sign your stars to extensions that's Blue Jays, right?
Gunnar Henderson is represented by Scott Boris, so is Jackson Holliday. That's definitely concerning.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Blue Jays are having all sorts of issues with Vladdy right now, and you know, Bo Bichette, they're both done after this season, and it's not looking too good right now. So
no, you didn't get him that extension he wanted.
No, he wants $550 million or something stupid. So I don't think he's going to get that from anybody. Well, but good for him.
And Gunner's projected to be the next like biggest deal in baseball.
Well, I mean, there's a huge difference between guys like Gunner talent-wise. And guys like Vladdy, right? Like,
the problem is
Vladdy's a bat.
Right. The problem is we don't have a good track record of making those huge deals.
Yeah, is it going to be Machado again? Right. Like,
I'm just. I'm just thankful we have newer ownership. So
you hope that they'll show it some
baseball,
money.
And of the Orioles. So.
Yeah, you'd love to see more owners, you know, like Steve Cohen, who are just fans and they want to win. They're willing to do anything to do it. Right? They'll spend their money. Yeah, correct. It's good. It puts butts in seats if you have the potential to win games. Right? So
we're rounding third base here in our episode, and we're approaching home plate. So I'm going to hit you with two more questions. One of them is Blue Jays related. One of them is Baltimore related. So, like, ultimately, you've got pretty high hopes for the Baltimore Orioles.
I do.
Let's say that things go as well as you hope and they get into the playoffs. How are they going to shake off, you know, the... I don't want to call it playoff struggle. It seems disingenuous, but you know what I'm getting at.
We don't show up.
How do they shake that off this year? And is there a team in the American League that you check for underneath your bed at night that you're scared of in the playoffs?
The easy answer is just experience that we've seen losing in the playoffs. And we have veterans now, and Adley and Gunner are veterans to this. They've seen the struggles. Hopefully we stay healthy. Health has always hurt us at the end of the season. I don't think we've ever gone into the playoffs healthy. So that's definitely a thing that would help us. But I really just, I'm leaning on that they've been there before mentality going into this season. As far as who am I scared of in the American League, I think the Texas Rangers. The Rangers seem to have everything set up for them.
They're going to bounce back.
They're
for
in
sure.
a weaker division. That means they get to beat up on other teams a little bit more. And I think they're really set up to be World Series or bust this year.
Wow.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, Texas is, they had a terrible year last year with some injuries and everything else. But yeah, they're being overlooked. And I mean, everyone's talking about, you know, all these big signings and everything else. But yeah, it's tough to overlook the Rangers. They just won the World Series a couple years ago. Like, it's not that far off from being the best team in baseball.
On paper, they're very good.
If DeGrom can stay healthy is the big question mark for them, right? Always. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's always a little ifs there. Well, appreciate you coming on, Josh. It's been an hour and 10 minutes of us just shooting the shit about our team. So love that.
I'm jealous you guys have Max Scherzer. He's one of the pitchers I've always wanted on the Orioles. I love his pitch style. And I love that he has two different color eyes. I can't think of anything else to just throw off a batter.
I know. That's so cool. That's the last question I have for you is Jays related. I want you to say one nice thing about the Jays and then the meanest thing you can think of to say about the Jays.
Well, I like Max Scherzer, so I got the nice thing out of the way.
All right, fine. We'll let that count.
Okay. Can I mention that Anthony Santander kind of sucks when he plays in Toronto?
Yeah, that
happens. Yeah. His numbers do not look good in the Sky Dome.
Yeah.
So fair enough. But I've got no beef with the Blue Jays. Anyone that's not the Yankees and the Red Sox are just more fun to play.
That's a good attitude. I love that.
Yep.
Well, appreciate you coming on. Before we let you go,
hot dogs are horrible.
Yeah, that's true.
There we go.
That's a good one to hate. Yeah, that's definitely hate worthy for sure. Before we let you go, let the people know, you know, where they can find you guys on socials and where they can listen to the show.
Yep, Section 336. Anywhere you want to listen to a podcast is there. And then I am on social media as Josh Soroka, JOSHSROKA as well.
Perfect. And yeah, shouts to you and your brother Matt. That's a long time to be podcasting. And we'll have to hopefully have you guys on again.
Sounds good.
Awesome, Josh. Well, thanks for joining us.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guaranteed details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.